If you are listening closely to the latter portion of Hebrews 10 as it was read, you are likely unsettled by what you heard. But before we begin to unpack the particular verses at the end of the 10th chapter, I want to simplify this passage and break it down into three digestible parts. Admittedly, Hebrews 10:26 to verse 31, in my mind, is one of the most terrifying warnings in all of the New Testament. Accordingly, within our outline, we'll refer to this first exhortation simply as, look out. Look out. It's a warning. Look out. And then in Hebrews 10:32 to 34, there is an exhortation to recall the former days when faithfulness was practiced. Accordingly, we'll refer to this second exhortation as look back. Look back. And finally, Hebrews 10:35 to 39 sets out the benefits that await those who endure to the end. Can you guess what this exhortation will be? Look forward. Look out, look back, and look forward. Well, the first exhortation, as we've said, provides one of the sternest warnings to those who would continue in a pattern of deliberate sin. So this is a particular pattern we're seeing, because every single one of us, subconsciously and consciously, we sin every single day, but in a variety of ways, and it's not something in most cases we're trying to do. So the first exhortation is not addressing those everyday missteps that we have, but the first exhortation is addressing an ongoing pattern of sin. Now, I realize that warnings are not pleasant, but I think you'll agree that warnings play an important role at ensuring our safety. I think of all the various road signs that you would come across, not so much here in Nassau, but if you've ever gone driving in the United States or in Canada, particularly in the rural areas, there are all kinds of creative signs meant to help you to look out and to be aware of your environment. Now, if you've never left this island, you've never seen this sign before. It's the sign of a deer running. And I even have a picture here. I've never seen one of these anywhere in the Bahamas. But if you're driving in northern Ontario, that is a very common sign to see. And it indicates that there's been a pattern or there's been a habit over the years of deers crossing at that particular point of the road. So while you're driving and looking ahead, you need to be paying attention to your environment to make sure a deer isn't trying to cross the road. Now, one of the more frightening traffic signs that I've seen in rural Ontario is the image of a cliff with rocks falling below. So imagine this, you're driving along and you see a cliff on the side of you, and then you see a sign of rocks falling. In fact, there is another version of that which has a car underneath the rocks that are falling. It's quite a terrifying sign to see. You begin looking up to see if there are any rocks going to hit your car. Now, I've never driven a transport truck, but I imagine the sign that depicts a transport truck going around a bend and tipping over. I imagine if I was driving a transport truck, that sign would unnerve me a bit. I would definitely slow down. Warnings are not pleasant. They're not meant to be pretty. If you look at most chemicals in your house that you use for cleaning, there's usually like a skull and crossbones symbol on it. It's meant to terrify you a little bit, because when we're afraid, we're careful. Now, just last Saturday, Allie and I celebrated our 22nd wedding anniversary. And you're wondering how this is relevant. Well, I want to make sure I tell this next story very carefully in order that I make it to my 23rd wedding anniversary. If you know me well, those of you who know me well, would agree that I can be somewhat particular with how I like things done. Allie says, Bryn, you have a system for everything. I mean, whether it's an ordinary thing, like how I shave or brush my teeth in the morning, I have a system for everything. So she knows I have very particular ways I like to do things. So for the last 22 years, Allie has had the mountainous task, and you can't see her expression because she's on audio video this morning, but Allie has had the mountainous task of discerning when I give advice, she has to figure out, is he giving wise counsel or is this just another one of his quirky systems and I just need to just tune him out and forget about it. So now I want to tell you the story that's relevant here. It was the first year of our marriage, and Allie was cooking something on the stove. And I think this is the case with most stoves. You have four burners, and they are different sizes. Most commonly, you have two small burners, and you have two bigger burners. So in this particular instance, Allie was using a very, very small cooking pot. And she had put it on the larger burner. And so, in the most gentle way I could think of, they were newly married. I want to tread carefully. I don't want to be, you know, that pushy, you know, kind of guy. So I said, Allie, you know, it's probably not the best idea to have the smallest pot on the largest burner. Well, Allie figured, you know, this is just another one of his quirky systems. You know, I don't remember exactly what she said, but it was probably something like, you need to settle down and just keep watching your TV show or whatever it was I was doing. So, true story. Within 2 minutes of me giving that warning, an oven mitt that was lying near the exposed burner immediately went up in flames. I mean, Allie and I were literally putting out fires in the first year of our marriage. Warnings are not pleasant. We do not like to be warned by other people. But often when we warn others, it is to protect them. We warn others because we want them to be safe. Well, I think this is what's behind the warnings in Hebrews 10. The author is not trying to be unduly harsh. I don't think he means to terrify those who are reading this book. But what I think he wants to know is the real danger that exists for those who continue in a deliberate pattern of sinning. Look at the text. It is a terrifying description of judgment. Verse 27. A fury of fire will consume his adversaries. That's God's adversaries. How is God's judgment described? As a fury of fire that will consume God's enemies. The author of Hebrews then asks a rhetorical question in verse 29. How much worse punishment do you think will be deserved by the one who is trampled underfoot, the Son of God? The description you have there is virtually the opposite of the description Paul gives of a Christian in Philippians 3 verse 8. In Philippians 3 verse 8, Paul says, I count all things as rubbish in order that I may gain Christ. And here in Hebrews, we're having pictured a person who treats Christ as rubbish in order to gain everything else. Such a person, we are told, will face the worst kind of punishment. So yes, the warnings in Hebrews 10 are not pleasant. They're actually quite terrifying. But they're designed to keep us safe from harm. Friends, what I want you to see is that it matters how you choose to live. And accordingly, we all need to be on the lookout. We need to be on the lookout and to guard against encroaching sin becoming a pattern in our life. And one of the things I really like about Hebrews is there is a delightful rhythm throughout the book where you have stern warnings that are followed by encouraging promises. So it's not a book about warnings and furious fires and that's it, but it's got stern warnings balanced by pictures of encouraging promises and hope. So for every passage, you might say, this is doom and gloom. I want to meet this author because he's got some doom and gloom going on. But if you keep reading, you'll always see a follow-up passage which gives you a portrait of great hope. In this instance, before the author tells us to look forward to that great hope, he tells us to look back. So first, we look out, we hear the warning, and secondly, we look back. The author writes, recall the former days, when after you were enlightened, you endured a hard struggle with sufferings. Now, the phrasing of the original Greek in that sentence is the same language that would have been applied to an athletic competition. So how you could translate it is to say this, remember that time when you stood your ground in a difficult contest. Remember when you stood your ground in a difficult contest. The author frames sin and suffering as an opponent to stand against. Well, if you have been a Christian for any amount of time, your experience likely resonates with this. Sin often presents itself as an attractive option. An option that threatens our faith in the promises of God. And suffering also threatens our faith. It threatens our faith in the goodness of God. And I'm certain that there are people who are here today who once flirted with patterns of sin, who flirted with sinful behaviors, but you ultimately found those sinful behaviors to be lacking. I also know that many of you have endured some terrible hardships. I know that many of you have endured things that have caused you to ask God, why? Why did you allow this terrible thing to happen to me? But here's the beautiful thing. You are here today. Many of you are here today having stood your ground against the difficult challenges brought about by your experience with sin and suffering. Many of you are here today because you have emerged victorious from your struggles. And you're now trusting in the promises of God more than ever before. I think it's for this reason the author of Hebrews exhorts us, recall the former days. See how far you've come. Remember the opposition you faced. Remember the challenges you went through and you emerged. You're still here. We need to look back. One of the most cherished hymns of the faith is the hymn Amazing Grace. And the hymn testifies on how looking back upon God's goodness helps us to actually look forward toward His future promises. You know that section of the hymn, through many dangers, toils, and snares, I have already come. 'Tis grace has brought me safe thus far, and grace will lead me home. When John Newton looks back and he recalls how God delivered him from many dangers, toils, and snares, it helps him to look forward with faith and assurance that God will finish the job and lead him home. Friends, I want you to see that our looking back is not a fixation on the good old days. Some people imagine we need to just go back to what we're... It's not a fixation on what we did in the good old days. Looking back is a strategy that the Bible prescribes to help us move forward in faith. We look back in our personal history and we're able to trace God's mercy. We look back in our history and we trace God rescuing us and saving us. And in turn, this helps us to trust in God's future faithfulness all the way to the finish line. Look at verse 34, and there are some specific examples for how the people in Hebrews looked back. The author writes, "You had compassion on those in prison. You joyfully accepted the plundering of your property, since you knew that you yourselves had a better possession and an abiding one." I don't know what goes through your mind when you read verse 34, but I read verse 34 and what immediately jumps out at me is this: I sure have a lot of room to grow. I have a lot of room to grow in my faith, because this is not a description of me, at least not yet. These Christians joyfully accepted the plundering of their property. Who does that? Just a few years ago, we had our car stolen from our driveway. Not something unique, I understand, in Nassau. But this was not something I joyfully accepted. I did not wake up and say, "Hooray, my car is gone. I'm suffering for Jesus." I do not know what it's like to joyfully accept suffering. I don't think too many of us joyfully accept suffering. What I think we're being called upon here is to hold loosely our earthly possessions. We know it's not wrong to be wealthy, or Abraham, David, Solomon, and others would be in trouble. So we know it's not a sin to have possessions. It's not a sin to be wealthy. But I think the point here is clear. Don't hold on tightly. You've got something better. You've got something more valuable. You have something more abiding, more permanent. So how do we do this? If we're holding tightly to our resources, if we're holding tightly to our possessions, how do we loosen the grip? We do this by looking forward. We do this by looking forward. We look ahead to what we will possess. We look ahead to what we will inherit. We will look ahead to what will be our home. And when we look forward at our heavenly possessions, when we look forward at our heavenly home, then it becomes obvious and sensible that we ought not to hold too tightly to the things of this world. The author of Hebrews is encouraging this group of people. He's encouraging them to keep this posture, to keep their confident posture. He's encouraging them, keep looking forward. He says in verse 35, "Don't throw away your confidence, which has a great reward." Don't throw away your confidence in whom? In Him, for it is a great reward. It appears that the people reading the book of Hebrews, they have the right posture spiritually. They have the right disposition, and they're living by faith. And so the author of this book says, just keep it up. Keep up the good work. Keep doing what you're already doing. Keep going forward. They have started the race well, and now the exhortation is to have endurance all the way to the end, that they might ultimately receive what is promised. On a personal note, the longer I'm in pastoral ministry, the clock is ticking at 18 years, by the way, the longer I'm in pastoral ministry, the more I see how important this exhortation to endure is. Why? Because in 18 years, over three congregations, it's been obvious to me, not everyone finishes well. Not everyone finishes the race. Not everyone who stands up at the front of the church and says, I believe and I promise to follow and I will be a Christian and I will be committed to this church. Not everyone who stands up here at the beginning of their Christian life makes it to the end. Sin and suffering and various forms of adversity have caused many to shipwreck their profession of Christianity. Now, I don't want to unsettle those who stood up here today and made a profession of faith. I don't want to make it sound like I just congratulated you on the one hand and said, oh, look out, you're in big trouble on the other hand. But I want us to be clear and to appreciate what we already know by experience, but Scripture confirms it. Not everyone who stands up at the front of the church and says, I will follow Jesus, actually stays in the race. Some have wandered away, and some have not returned. And it is a sobering warning that we have in verse 38. Look at verse 38. This is staggering for me. My righteous one shall live by faith. And if he shrinks back, my soul has no pleasure in him. God's saying, I have no pleasure in the one who shrinks back. Look at how it finishes in verse 39. But we are not those who shrink back. See the optimism there. We are not those who shrink back. Can we say in our hearts today, can we say to the Lord today, we're not going to be that person who disqualifies themselves. We are among those who will not shrink back. Because the author says they're destroyed. Those who shrink back are destroyed. But those who have faith to the end preserve their souls. So you wouldn't be here today unless you counted yourself in some way to be in this race, following Jesus. And so the question is, are you going to finish the race, or are you going to get off course? Are you going to shrink back? Because that's the contrasting image. At the beginning of the passage, he says, you stood your ground. And then in the latter half, he talks about those who didn't stand their ground. Those who were shrinking backwards. And I don't mean to be funny with this next image that's going to go up on the screen, because it struck me as a powerful image for what we're talking about. We're being challenged here as people who profess faith in Christ to ask ourselves, will we stand the test of time as a Christian, or will we shrink back? So in this image, I don't know how easy it is to see, but that is a black baseball bat. So a professional baseball game is being played, and as happens from time to time, the bat slips out of the batter's hands and is flung into the stands. What you'll notice, if you look carefully, just about everyone in that picture is doing what? Shrinking back. Right? There's a threat to their safety. And just about everyone is shrinking back in the face of that threat. But what you see is one person who does not shrink back. You see an outstretched arm? Can you see what that arm is in front of? That arm is right in front of the face of his son, who would have otherwise been struck in the face, in the head, and could have potentially died from it. I put that picture in front of you because I want that photograph to become for us a metaphor. That is a metaphor for the kind of faith that I want to possess. That when threats to my faith come, threats to my friend's faith, threats to my family's faith, that I would put out my arm. That I would stand my ground when threatened with harm. And I want that kind of faith for you. Bad things have happened to you. Bad things will happen to you. Will you stand your ground? Will you put out your arm and protect others in harm's way? I want us to be able to stand our ground against the many threats to our faith. And as I think about the need for us to look out, the need for us to look back, and the need for us to look forward in an enduring way, in a to the finish line kind of way, there is one resource that can help us get the finish line. This book is full of warnings. And the warnings aren't often pleasant, but the warnings are designed to help us look out for things that would harm our faith. This book will also help you look back in order that you might trace God's faithfulness over the course of your life. This book will also help you to look forward. No other book paints an accurate picture of what is to come, what heaven will be like, what kind of experience we have, what kind of inheritance awaits. This book will help you look forward. It'll give you a glimpse of the better possession and the better reward. A reward for those who do not shrink back. Dear friends, the journey is long. The race is long. The race is difficult. But you're still here. You haven't given up yet. You haven't made a shipwreck of your faith yet. You're here. You've stood your ground. 'Tis grace has brought you safe thus far. And it's grace that will lead each of you home. Amen.